sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone 500
greatest album.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us again. Today we are discussing album number 75 on Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Greatest Albums list. This is Lady Soul by the one and only Aretha Franklin.
We apologize for the delay, regular listeners. Turns out we were a chain of fools here, thinking that we could... get things out on time, and the summer has gotten away from us a little bit, so this episode is coming out a week later than some of you may be expecting. For those of you who stockpile, you won't even notice that this is late, and we'll pretend it's just a regular rhythm or routine here as we get into Aretha and the Queen of Soul.
I released an episode. I published an episode a few weeks ago, Ben. And it was just after, we usually publish at midnight. It usually, yes. You know, a few days ahead and schedule it to release at midnight on the Saturday. And I finished it just after midnight. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, well, I'll just publish right now. And by the time I went to bed and everything was done, there was already, you know, like 40 downloads or something. Well, maybe when I woke up in the morning. I was like, okay, so there are some people who who get at it right away. So if you're one of those people, number one, we appreciate you very
got
much.
Got it set to auto-download on their phone.
Yeah, yeah. So, number two, you're the ones who will notice this delay. So we appreciate your patience. And everyone else, thanks for being here.
Yep, we appreciate it. So hopefully we'll get ourselves back on track here and finish out this block of episodes here in a timely manner.
Absolutely. I guess that's one of the benefits of being independent, eh, bud?
I guess that's true. We don't have a boss who's shouting at us for being late. It's just our own guilt that's getting us right back at it.
I have none.
Good.
So let's just carry on.
Perfect.
Why don't we kick things off with some details? How's it sound?
I think that's important.
Details. 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 Lady Soul was released January 22nd, 1968. This is her 12th studio album in, like 6 or 7 years since she started. Yeah. Writing credits. Now, Aretha was one who had, I'm not saying she didn't write, but I think especially in her early career, and maybe even throughout her career, a lot of people wrote great songs for her.
Yeah. Well, and really, like, that, not just this dense portion of releasing albums, but I think she has something like 40 studio albums over her lifetime. So, I mean, you can't put music out that frequently if you're writing all of it.
No. I think there's another thing throughout the history of recording artists. I think people also gravitate towards really great performers. So, you know, when she came on the scene, I imagine there were songwriters who I would love to have a song performed by Aretha.
Powerful voice, too. Not just a great performer, but like, I'm imagining this with her voice in mind.
Exactly. I'm talking about the whole package, right? Absolutely. So you can expect that people would have been, I would imagine, coming out of the woodwork saying, here, do my song, you know? So, as we'll see here, some very well-established songwriters writing songs for her. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about many different songwriters. Aretha has a co-writing credit on two tracks, Sweet Sweet Baby, Since You've Been Gone, and Good to Me as I Am to You. Otherwise, it's written by other people. It charted well, and we've talked about how the charts have changed over the decades. She charted, the album charted on three different charts, okay? She was number two on the U.S. Billboard Top Pop Albums. She was number three on the U.S. Billboard Top Jazz Albums. And she went to number one on the U.S. Billboard Top Soul Albums. So, it's like all these different charts. Now, we know that's been consolidated a little better these days, but but it did chart very well.
Yep.
Sales, she's certified gold in the U.S., so that's 500,000 units in the U.S. Couldn't find any other numbers. A couple notes here. We talked about that this is her 12th release. Important to note, this is her fourth album released in 12 months. This was released in January. She released an album early 1967. She released two more albums in 1967. And this comes out January 22nd, 1968. So in 12 months, this is her fourth album. Can you imagine? Think about your favorite artist right now, Ben. And the next 12 months, they release four albums.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor kind of comes close sometimes when she just unleashes the fury of stuff for her fans. But yeah, it's not quite the same.
In 2020, she did two surprise albums. Like, it was like, hey, guess what, I released a new album today, and everyone's surprised. And then a few months later she was like, hey, guess what, I got another one coming out today. Because we were just, you know, we had a really good time and had lots of material, and that was two in a year, and that's unprecedented.
And partially due to the pandemic, right? Like, everything shut down, so she had more time.
In the studio with just a few people, and of course, so many different thoughts and emotions at the time. People reflecting on so many different things. I get it. But we talked about the 60s and how people were just pumping out music at a feverish rate. Just crazy. You know, was not uncommon at the time to have a couple albums a year. Plus, the album was still a somewhat new concept, not totally new, but the LP, when it used to be just singles and compilations from studios or record companies or labels, I guess. So I think with Aretha too, just this ability to crank out these tunes, get in the studio, just work hardworking individual for sure. So anyways, I thought that was pretty crazy when I was looking at her discography and just couldn't believe how much.
It's also fascinating, like, just putting her in context. This album and this fury of music comes out in 1968,
right?
Which we sort of think about in that, like, really meaty part of pivotal rock and roll being created, and the psychedelia and the Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and the Stones and all this. And, like, this is not that at all. And it's coming out prolifically and rocking the charts despite it being so different than what's out there kind of changing music at that time.
Well, but soul music was huge.
Yeah.
You know, at the time. And along a parallel to the rock revolution, the soul music was surging and with Motown and all that stuff, you know, leading up into some of the great soul music as we get into the 70s with, you know, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye. We're going to talk about Curtis Mayfield very, very soon, next week. This was all part of that. And I don't want to say lead up as if this wasn't big
right
at the time, but yeah, it was just huge. We talked about, you know, she worked with a lot of other people, other musicians. Aretha sang and played piano on the album, but she had a lot of guest musicians. I'll read a few. Some names are familiar to me on the album: Eric Clapton, and also Bobby Womack and Joe South and Jimmy Johnson, all contributing guitar parts. Tommy Cogbill on bass. We've got Spooner Oldham on keys. King Curtis, saxophone. Sissy Houston, mother of the late Whitney Houston, who sang backup and was part of the Sweet Inspirations, was a group that sang backup on the album. So, and many others, but those are just a few. If you're familiar with the artists of the time and the era, you probably know all the names, but many, many other artists contributing. And as I mentioned, many songwriters. Of course, Carole King, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. She wrote for Aretha for this album, later released it on her own album, but this was who she wrote it for, her and her husband at the time, Jerry Goffin. Curtis Mayfield, people get ready, and we're going to talk about Curtis Mayfield next week, and also James Brown writing, either taking songs or writing for her. I wanted to talk about a really interesting connection between some albums we've done. So last week, or last episode, we did Kanye West, and there's a song that samples Aretha Franklin, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now we're doing Aretha Franklin, and there's a song written by Curtis Mayfield. And next week we're doing Superfly by Curtis Mayfield.
Wow! That might be your best example yet of the manipulation of this list and not just relying on the voting.
I think it was coincidence, but pretty cool.
That's fantastic. Good job.
If we go back just a few weeks, People Get Ready is also part of One Love by Bob Marley on Exodus, number 71. That's a few back, but anyways.
Wow.
Going down a rabbit hole, but this music is so, you know, we're going from 2000s hip hop to 60s soul to 70s funk soul soundtrack.
Yep.
they're all connected there. Anyways, I guess not as much of a stretch from Aretha to Curtis Mayfield, but
that's right.
Throw Kanye in there. Anyways, kind of a little tidbit for you.
When we listen to I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, which is just the previous year, right? Like probably not even a year before.
Yes, so you're right. It was one of the albums she did the previous year.
Also late 60s, also this sort of very pivotal cultural time, especially in American and British music. I listen to this music and think it's older than that era. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of listening to the oldies with my dad growing up and not really having a good grasp on what an oldie is or what it meant at that time.
Yeah, when exactly.
When exactly, yeah. But for some reason, I think there was a willingness to play some of that soul and R&B stuff from the 60s on an oldie station that probably wouldn't be playing some of the late 60s rock at the time, at least when we were kids. So I think that's what does it for me. And it's been, as we've been working up to this review, I've been trying to figure out, like, why is it that I hear Aretha and think, oh, this is sort of timeless. This has been around forever in a different way than I hear the Beatles, the Stones, Zeppelin, a lot of the other stuff that we've listened to from a similar kind of era. But that's something for me to work through as I
well. I can offer some feedback on that.
Okay,
if you're interested,
I'd love it.
I think a lot of this music calls back to what was happening, especially in black music in the late 50s and early 60s. It calls back to the inspirations which Curtis Mayfield.
Well, and even before that, right? Like she's singing about the gospel train here, which is like.
Absolutely,
that's old soul.
I think. A couple things. Number one, there's some of the sounds. You know, the background, the singers. Like we think about some of the vocal groups we listen to on the Phil Spector compilation. You know, the Ronettes and the Crystals, earlier '60s. I think this does call back to some of that. Some of the early soul, even Marvin Gaye, early 60s, Stevie Wonder, early 60s, some of that stuff. I think a lot of her sound calls back to an earlier 60s soul sound, which a lot of people were really into and was still very popular. When you get into some of the rock at the same time, even Zeppelin, who Zeppelin was taking from the blues legends of the 50s and even the 30s back to Robert Johnson, but turning it absolutely on its head. Yes, paying tribute.
Really trying to reinvent it.
Oh,
whereas she's holding the tradition well while she reimagines it in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're listening, Ben, if you're listening to Jimi Hendrix, if you're listening to Led Zeppelin, if you're listening to even maybe some of the later 60s Bob Dylan, some of the more electric stuff, and some of the other acts, The Who, you know, from the late 60s, early 70s, it is very, very much pushing the envelope, going into something new. And I don't want to say that Aretha wasn't doing anything new or that she was tired. certainly that's not the case at all. However, right. I think there's more connection, more hearkening back to what was happening in the last 10, 15, even 20 years, and some more maybe nostalgia and kind of a fondness of what had come before, whereas a lot of other things were pushing into the future, new sounds, new technology, more than this. I'm sure there's a counter argument there as well to that, but I really do. I agree with you. It feels a little older than it is when you compare it to some of the other things at the time, but that's not negative, not necessarily negative, I don't think, in this case at all. But I think there is something more, a little more traditional about it.
No, I think what you said is spot on and really helps sort of sift some things in my mind as I'm as I'm continuing on this path of listening to all this music and how it's acknowledges the tradition that it's coming out of. No, that's really, really cool.
But isn't that one of the joys of this project, this journey, Ben, that we've listened to? How many albums now have we listened to between, 67 and 70,
right?
For example, and how different are they all? Like just, from left to right, just so, so different and amazing. They all came out in the same time, in a similar context, all kind of, living in their own little areas, little niches, even geographically, culturally, even racially, but still existing in the same place. It's pretty cool. Yeah. We're getting to try and piece all that together as we go through.
Yep, and each one kind of helps you understand the other too.
Absolutely. Yep. So we'd love to talk about the album cover. Of course, this would be an LP cover, and a lot of Aretha's albums are, just a really nice iconic picture of her front and center. Like what else do you put there, right? Because this is, it's so much about her. It's her powerful voice. She's an icon, a powerful figure. But I like this one. It's the top quarter is kind of a purple background. I can't tell what's at the top, but in big block capitals, Aretha, : Lady Soul. And I love at this point how that doesn't have to say Aretha Franklin.
Right.
It's like Elvis, right?
Yeah.
Or Michael or Janet or, like you don't. Aretha's good enough.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who that is. And then a photo of her holding, just her face, shoulders, her hair, not even all her hair, cuts off the top of her hair. Although the styles were quite large at the time, smiling, singing with the microphone. And I think that's pretty appropriate. This is her persona as, the great vocalist, the great soul singer.
It doesn't look posed like
No, it looks candid. I would say it's candid.
Like he's performing here and someone caught it in the moment. Not as like I remember thinking, I never loved the man the way I love you looked almost like a glamour shot at the mall or something, like kind of hazy and very posed. Whereas this almost is like they caught that at the right moment, right in the middle of a performance of something.
Yeah, and it's amazing how that's 6 months apart, the albums. Anyways, I don't know about the photos, but just a very different style too. I like this one. Looks very relaxed, very candid. It's a nice shot. Nice shot.
The font really dates it, though. I mean, it just looks like really early graphic design.
To me, institutional. Like this is on the front of a really boring textbook, that we would have had in the 80s, but it would have been from the 60s. Just something like they just had to put a title on there.
Didn't worry about layering it over the picture. It was just chunk it in the top.
Yes. it does what it does its job.
Yep.
It's got the title right there. Before we get into some of the tracks, Ben, I'm assuming, was this a first time listen for you?
Definitely first time for me.
Yeah.
This felt more familiar than the previous one, I Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You. And I don't know why that is. maybe because of what we've talked about, some of the other artists who contributed. So, you know, even though I'm not as familiar with her version of You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, that's a song I've loved and listened to for many years on Carole King's Tapestry. And,
okay.
You know, same thing with People Get Ready. We've got that tie to other artists.
Right.
It may just be for that reason that there's something familiar about a lot of these tracks here. So pressing play was a very comfortable kind of journey in many ways, even though it was definitely the very first time I've ever listened to this grouping of songs at this particular order.
Right, same. Yeah, I hadn't listened to the whole album. I think, Ben, I agree with you with the familiar. I think I'm familiar with the songs, more songs than the other album, the Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You. But I think I know a lot of them as different versions, like different different recordings.
Yep.
You know, I think with the exception of the one you mentioned, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, I was much more familiar with this version than Carole King's version when we listened to that, because that was a new album for me, but it was one that you had listened to for years. Yeah. But Chain of Fools, yeah, You Make Me Feel. Groovin', I think that was, you talked about the Oldies Station. Do you remember Don Daynard's Saturday Night Oldies on CHFI? No. Did you?
Sure, sounds familiar, but I,
well, they released he released some CDs, and my parents got that in the 90s, and we actually listened to them a lot. It was pretty good, but it was like, you know, the golden oldies with dazzling Don Daynard, and they had a few of those, and it was stuff from the, you know, late 50s, early 60s, and I'm pretty sure Groovin' was on that, but not this version, a previous one. I don't want to say original, but. So I was familiar with the songs, but not necessarily Aretha's versions of the songs.
Yeah.
But there was a familiarity here for sure. Chain of Fools always makes me think of the movie School of Rock. Have you seen that with Jack Black?
It's been years, but yeah. I mean,
it's full of great music, and it's a really, I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a great heartwarming movie. It's as silly as he can be, it's pretty good, and it's mostly with kids, and he teaches these kids to play rock and roll songs. And there's a moment where there's a young black girl who is shy but can sing very well.
Hey, Tamika, what's up?
I don't want to be a roadie.
What? Why not? It's an important job. All right. Well, you want to be a security?
I want to be a singer.
A singer? Okay, sing me something. Tamika, I can't let you be a singer if you can't sing.
You told me to leave you alone. My papa said, come on home. My doctor said, take it easy. But your loving is much too strong.
She's about to walk away, and then she starts singing a portion from Chain of Fools a cappella.
Oh, my goodness.
And just, you know, nice, obviously has great talent. I don't know why. When I hear it, it just makes me think of that part of that movie.
Welcome aboard.
Because she is kind of the Aretha figure in that movie, you know, in the group of kids. It's a pretty cool movie. It's one of my favorites. But, you know, lots of other things. If you're new to this, we do have a Spotify playlist. It's called SoundLogic Favorites. Every time we review an album, we pick two songs. So we're going to pick two. Tough one here. Ben, do you have one in mind?
I'm feeling the tension of, like, Chain of Fools is definitely the one that stands out the most for me on this album, but it feels like an easy pick because it's so well known. I think the one that I was less familiar with but surprised me when I listened to it was Sweet Sweet Baby Since You've Been Gone. I don't know, it's definitely more upbeat and it packs a bit of a punch, and I like the I like the slower pace of people get ready and sort of tie back, like I mentioned, to the getting on the train and some of the really deep soul of tradition she belongs to. I think Sweet Sweet Baby will be my pick. Unless I'm stealing that one from you, and then I can easily pick Chain of Fools.
No, that's not my pick, although they're fantastic. They're all really good. It's a fantastic album. Like, there's really I don't think there's a soft spot on this album at all. It's very strong. I'm struggling between two. It's going to either be Chain of Fools or Nicky Hokey.
Okay.
Which has got a great groove. I'll talk about that in a bit. I'm going to go Chain of Fools. That's going to be my pick, although it could be one of about five.
we'll add Chain of Fools. I think that's an appropriate one. Apparently, she sang at Obama's inauguration, and there's a very, very sweet performance of hers later on during his presidency. I forget what the story was, if she was being honored for some particular reason, but she sings "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman" at the piano in a very, like, kind of low-key version, but President and First Lady, like, are moved to tears. They're, like, in each other's arms and sobbing because of this performance. good to put Chain of Fools there, because apparently upon meeting her, he quoted a line from Chain of Fools in their first meeting. So,
Maybe we should talk for a moment. So we're talking about performances. She performed "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman" when Carole King was inducted at the Kennedy Center.
I want to say
2015. So Carole King is sitting between Barack and Michelle Obama on the balcony, watching Aretha sing her song back to her.
Wow. Okay.
It's a pretty cool performance, and she is on her feet singing along with Aretha. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. That's a pretty cool moment too. When I think about Aretha, not just this album, but her as a artist and as an icon, the word that comes to mind is just legacy. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just left this incredibly huge legacy behind, and those things we're talking about in, as we know now, in really the last chapters of her years, are just her continuing her amazing legacy, her ability to be able to perform even later in her life, just amazing. Some of these songs that have stood the test of time, for sure. I'll make a few comments on some of the tracks. So Chain of Fools, right away. And again, there's so many versions of this, great versions of this song. But right away, what grabs me is the guitar. This kind of bassy vibrato, even tremolo, even something on it. And just a really cool sound, you know. And I want to talk just really briefly about an Aretha album is all about her, right? It's all about her vocals, and it's to showcase her amazing talent. However, the musicians on this album are fantastic. Like, they just do a great job. There's not too many long instrumental parts or solos, really, which is fair. You know, that's not what this album's for, but there's just some amazing players and amazing sounds and instrumentation, you know, sounds that I didn't expect on an Aretha album. These cool guitar sounds and keyboard sounds, really, really neat. I love, I think it's one bass player the whole album, Tommy Cogbill. He lays down a great groove and does some really great stuff, especially on the song I mentioned, my runner-up, Nicky Hokey. He's got this great...
Man, it's punchy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, this great, you know, this great little run going on through the whole thing. I don't know how he keeps it up. Pretty awesome. You know, as much as she steals the show, which is fine, her backing musicians are fantastic, you know. And it makes sense to me, like, you need world-class support mm-hmm. when you're an artist like Aretha, right? Yep. And she's also going to attract, you know, that world-class support. You know, having Eric Clapton on the album, like who wouldn't want to play with Aretha? Mm-hmm. So, just a couple things I picked up on. You know, really, really, really great, great rhythm section. You know, a few different guitarists. You know, just awesome performance from her personnel. Really great.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that her backup singers are the Sweet Inspirations, which included. Did you say this already?
I did.
Oh.
Do you want to say it again?
Chatting with one of my kids.
Sissy Houston, mother of the late Whitney Houston, who sang backup and was part of the Sweet Inspirations, was a group that sang backup on the album.
Perfect. Bravo.
You know, Mike, we should probably say something about
about this note you've already put here.
No, but that's good. And I was listening to that trying to think, you know, do I hear a bit of Whitney in her mom singing? I think maybe that might be a bit of a stretch and not necessarily fair, but what about you? Was there any tracks or any moments in particular that really stood out to you?
No, but I think this album feels like an appropriate background music album. And I don't mean that because it's not something I want to focus on, but it is the sort of thing that you could put on while you're making dinner or doing the dishes, and my guess is that people in the house would enjoy it.
Yes,
it's not going to offend anyone, and it's probably going to make people move and possibly even sing along from time to time, and it works really well as a nice neat package. I'm having some trouble figuring out exactly how long these 10 tracks are, because most of the track listings I've looked at include the CD version, which adds a few things, but it's not very long at all. To be able to cruise through these tracks, I think it's just they're just really well thought through, put together. I understand why it's on this list of the greatest albums of all time.
I think it's been about half an hour.
Yeah, something like that.
Like short, very short, mm-hmm. you know, 14-15 minutes aside. Yeah, a short album, but I mean, it's fantastic. I think you're absolutely right. If you had a little party with a bunch of different groups in a room socializing, to have this on in the background, it's mm-hmm. you know, people can enjoy it, maybe hum along to it, but it's not too, you know, overpowering or too abstract. Like it's get people tapping their toes and listening in, but also not too just kind of settled that disappears. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't want people to misunderstand me. This is also an album you could, and in fact, I've done this a couple times this week, put the headphones on and really savor the mix and the balance. And like you were saying, the instrumentation, there's enough depth here that you really can take it very seriously and very nerdy. In addition to having it on in the background from time to time.
Anything else, Ben?
I don't think so. This is another one where I think we struggle sometimes to know what to say about music that's just really good. We don't have any problems with it. It's not controversial.
I wrote sometimes, like, I try and just sum it up with a few words, and I wrote classic sound, easy to listen to, timeless.
Perfect.
Which I guess is kind of leads into the next the next section. And
maybe before we get to our final thoughts, like,
sure,
you know, race and music go so close together, especially in the United States. Hmm. To have this like really powerful, incredible, strong black female voice, we can't overlook that too. It's not just classic timeless. It's also a symbol, I think, for power in the racial heaviness of this country's history.
Right, and I'm glad you said that, Ben, because I certainly don't want to downplay, and that's something where, if we had a guest, maybe we would touch on it more. That's something we're not going to touch on too much on this one. You know, the cultural and racial importance of not just this album, but just Aretha in general, and in that time mm-hmm. of change, that time of you know, justice movement. Absolutely. And I don't feel like I'm the right person to comment on that too much, but 100%, you're right. Absolutely.
Why don't we dive into our reflections here now?
Sure.
Starting with this slight adjustment of our old question, what has aged well, what has not? And I think you summarized it pretty well. Classic sound, easy to listen to, timeless. I don't listen to this and think, ooh, that sounds dated. It definitely, like, it, you know, I associate it with oldies in the pickup truck. So it sounds like from another time, but it's still music I want to be listening to. It doesn't feel... Like, I remember listening to The Sun Sessions, our first go-round with Elvis.
Right.
And just thinking, like, this is... I can understand how this was revolutionary, but this feels old at this point. There's stuff I still like, but man, this is old. And I don't feel that with Aretha.
No. I think it's, you know, our question, has it aged well? What has and what hasn't? To me...
It's aged really well.
I think it's the music, her voice, obviously, the sound, the other artists. To me, I think the thing that shows its age or maybe hasn't aged is simply the production value and the technology. Mm-hmm. When I was listening to this, and I don't know if I have a pretty good pair of wireless headphones. I was listening to it the other day, and sometimes I listen to the headphones I'm using now, which are both fairly decent quality, not obviously not studio quality. But I felt like her vocal is like too much for the microphones they had. There are times when she hit a really high note or really a real power note that it was like clipping a bit or like it was starting to, be slightly distorted. Could have been my headphones, but I think like it's just the technology of the time could not handle the power that she's projecting there. Other than that, I think it all, you know, even something like maybe the background singers, but a lot of that stuff we've talked about, a lot of that stuff is, you know, is cycling back through, you know, and it comes and goes, it comes in waves. But these songs, I think, are still very relevant. The lyrics are relevant. The way that the instruments are played is relevant. To me, I think it's just, you know, you can tell the recording is a little older. It's still a great recording. Don't get me wrong, but you can tell a few things. So those are the only things. But that's not really has nothing to do with Aretha or the producers or any of the artists. It's just what they had.
As you say that, I can almost hear some recording room noise, like almost just the echo of the space that the vocalist or the band was playing in, that I'm sure would get cleaned up if it was recorded today. It doesn't bother me at all. There's no snare drum problems here, Mike. Is that fair to say?
No, it's 68, so we haven't got into some of the horrible processed snare sounds of the 70s.
Oh man! You know what? I was just thinking about the pop punk snare of the Ooh. Late 90s and how. That's really starting to sound sort of dated.
tight, very tight, tight crack, right?
I forget which artist came on recently. We listened to an XM station in the car that's like hits from the 90s and the first decade of the 2000s. And, so it's all our corn picking and college songs, right? And something came on that's just like, oof. That snare drum, Mike's right.
yeah. And then you get back, you know, the 2000s, 2010s, and you get into more of some neo soul, and even some of the alt rock or alt folk rock, and a very, very loose, resonating snare, which is more like what we're listening to here, which again has more to do with the technology and what they had at the time than really deciding what sound they want, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But not that of the of the 70s. anyways,
wrap up tangent. Sorry.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, Ben. This is album number 75, 75th best album ever, according to this list. How do you feel about that ranking?
I kind of felt when we reviewed her last album, like it was appropriate to have something from Aretha there. And I remember thinking, well, I'm curious to see what her next stuff is and why this one's here and those others aren't. I'm a bit more perplexed now. I think I would put this one higher, and I think this one might deserve to be a little higher than it is. The other one's good too, but I'm curious as to why they are this way. Maybe just their significance.
I've made comments before about the possibility, and many people have opposed this idea, the possibility that single songs help elevate the status of an album on this list. And, you know, R.E.S.P.E.C.T. is one of those tunes that's kind of larger than life.
That's true.
And that was on that album you mentioned, which is at number 13. I don't want to say conclusively that that's why, but that is, you know, a massive, like one of the biggest songs
ever.
Right. Yep. So, okay. I think this has maybe more recognizable songs. Why this isn't a little higher, I'm not sure. I mean, it's one of those things too, we've talked about, you know, separating the ranking of the album versus the ranking of the artist. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about Aretha, and she's got a, if you go, you know, artists or bands, what is she, top 10? Top 20 at least, like in the last 100 years, like she's right up there. You take individual albums, and then it's, you know, there's other albums that might, you know, that artist or group might not even appear on that top 100 list, but had a really, really significant album.
Yep.
You know, so I always find it challenging to do that with, especially with an artist like this, who again is larger than life. So I don't know. Again, she needs to be well represented. And the other thing that's challenging too, like in terms of Aretha's albums, like in the 60s, do they start to bleed together? I mean, you can't put, in 1968, you can't put your iPod on shuffle and listen to all. So you have to pick out that album and listen to the album. You're not going to just listen to a track and pull out the next album, listen to a track. Yep. Probably not. Yep. So maybe you are just, okay, you've got five Aretha albums, but you're really only going to one or two because those are your favorites. I don't know. But it's hard with so many albums. But I think with the hits on this, I could see it a little higher. I that wouldn't bother me at all. I think it'd be appropriate. Top 50, no problem.
Yeah.
And if the other one's 13, if it's not just because of R-E-S-P-E-C-T, why can't... Spelling's not my strong point, obviously. Why can't this be higher? Why isn't this one up there?
Well said. We've got a bit more time to ponder before we get to her again. This 2020 list added two more Aretha albums, which is appropriate, I think. Two more from the same year, from 1972. Amazing Grace and Young, Gifted, and Black. One comes in at number 154, the first, and then Young, Gifted, and Black is 388. So, we've got we've got some time here now to contemplate. And interesting that I Never Loved a Man and Lady Soul have been back to back on the original list, the 2012 list, the coffee table book, and now here they are with some space between.
Yeah.
They've both moved up, but one moved way up and one just a few spots. So
10 spots, yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah, and interesting when we get to that 1972 Young, Gifted, and Black album, you know, in that time where the empowerment was just really, you know, getting very, very strong. You get Stevie Wonder in there, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. You know, Curtis, we're going to talk next week, Curtis Mayfield's Superfly, 1972. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just a very, and to title your album like that too, is just speaking power and being out there. And that's, yeah, really excited to talk about more of those albums at that time. Any other closing thoughts, Ben, before we wrap it up?
No, this has been a pleasure. I'm looking forward to Curtis Mayfield, and we'll see what we've got to say next time.
Yeah, that's coming up next week, number 76, Superfly by Curtis Mayfield, a soundtrack he released for movie of the same name. Ben, I guess between now and then, we should watch that movie.
Good point.
We are live
a couple times by tackling albums, soundtracks that we haven't watched the movie. So.
Yeah, we should do it. We could do a live watch party on the TikToks. What do you think?
Ooh. I don't know that we know how, but sure.
I'm sure we could figure it out. Or Twitch. You on the Twitch?
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I Twitch anyways, so that's fine. Or Facebook Live.
I hope our recording has captured your spouse's laughter in the background as you suggest these things.
The wife's chortles in the background. Well, maybe we'll do the Facebook Live so the boomers can join us too.
Perfect.
Anyways, whatever platform you'd like
to
listen to.
We haven't lost our audience yet.
If you're still here, thank you. It was a listen to the end, as they say. Yep. And until next time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you. And of course, we really hope you join us right here on the Sound Logic Podcast. Take care, everyone, and thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our Sound Logic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.